And good morning, everyone. Spillo here, Brad Spillane, for another episode of the Men's Mental Health Show. And yeah, we're looking forward ahead. We've got a good show lined up for you guys. I've got a couple of Northern Beaches boys. Of course, John Millam's here again joining us, and another chap who's written a book on spirituality, John Bayat. But before we get into that and introduce you to everyone, just a quick thanks to the sponsors of the Men's Mental Health Show. Kai Aura Honey, that's K-A-I-O-R-A, or B2Body, B-E-E-2Body.com, and some wonderful Manuka honey. That's actually part of my family's heritage. So get involved, get behind the Manuka honey, all manufacturing personnel, recruitment and labour hire in the manufacturing industry. For all your staffing solutions, get onto AMP, all manufacturing personnel. And a big thanks to Mounties as always. All right, let's get stuck into this. It's a show where I thought we'll sort of do this in sort of two halves. It might be one third and then the other two thirds. But we've got a wonderful chap that's come up and has put a book together on something that's pretty close to the hearts, particularly of John Millam, who, of course, is with us every week. And John's big on his spirituality, and as am I, but probably not to the extent yet or the depth.
Maybe as all men are.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Part of the greater consciousness.
Yeah, of something that's larger than ourselves, really, isn't it?
Is
it?
Yeah, maybe. Let's explore that further.
Right? Okay, well, let's get into that. So without further ado, well, good morning to our guest today, to John Bayat. If I've pronounced that correctly.
Cool. Yep.
Mike, thanks, first of all, for making the trip all the way up here, man.
Yes, it was longer than I expected.
Oh, really?
I got stuck in traffic.
Oh, you didn't, did you?
Yeah. So
there was an accident on the M4.
Yeah. All right. But, tell us a little bit about yourself, John, and, you know, what was like growing up for you, where you're from, what gave you the inspiration to put this book together, and, just give the listeners.
So I'm born in the Philippines with a Spanish background, so it was interesting to see the different cultures that was flowing through my bloodline.
All right.
And hence I didn't look at the idea of nationalism or racism. For me, all human beings are one without the concept of racism. So, growing up there, it's always been involved in a very strong Catholic upbringing. Always wondered what the whole meaning of life is all about. And we'd have all those visits to the cemetery every November for All Saints Day.
Right.
And we'd have a party, we'd have a feast, and, you know, all sorts of things that would happen.
Yeah.
And early on in life, I'd see certain things and always wondered about it.
Wanted to explore, get deeper and further.
Yeah, it's a natural human trait to actually explore it.
Yeah.
Much deeper, you know, you wonder. I was wondering at such a young age, you know, what life's all about.
Mm, mm.
You know, why do people die, you know, for example?
Yeah.
There was an incident when we were in primary school where one of the nuns died.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and we all had to go and see her body laid in state in the church. You know,
wow.
So it's like that was a scary thing. But we all went around, looked at her and saw her.
Yeah.
And then I sat down and wondered, what happened to her? Where'd she go?
Ah.
You know, and I'd look at her alabaster skin, similar to the alabaster skin of, you know, Mary, that was a statue.
Okay.
And I thought, wow. And then the priest would bring his cross to her lips.
Right.
And I thought, wow, that's an amazing symbol.
Yeah.
So years later with my study, I'd sort of see that only the gods in ancient Egypt held the ankh and put it on the lips of the deceased person to give them spiritual life.
Ah.
So that was that connection that was back in when I was about 8, 9 years old or even 7 years old to years later where the teaching of, say, ancient Egypt came to life, and seeing that relationship, the correspondence, was brilliant.
That's wonderful, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, I'd have dreams and insights and visions and so...
Hmm.
I'll talk to you about the cover of the book when you're ready.
Yeah. So your spirituality based on that Christian sort of faith, or you've moved into Buddhism or exploring different faiths? Or?
Yeah, there's a question here in a sense that a lot of people ask, you know, what is spirituality? Is it the same as religion?
Mm.
All of these things, right? So this whole concept is actually a dichotomy of the one thing.
Okay.
Because the word spirituality means a breath of life.
Mm.
And it relates to the breath of your being. And it relates to that idea of the Ankh, which is spiritual life.
Yeah.
And the idea of enthusiasm and spirited and movement, which also relates to the concept of enthusiasm.
Yeah.
So, and which is an amazing word to use for, depression or mental health issues.
Sure.
Because the word enthusiasm is breaking it up on etymology. It words in, and theos means God.
Yeah.
Ism means is the action of God. So it's the... It's that action of divine being right through you, which is your very life, which is the same as spirituality.
Sure.
And the word religion is actually from the Latin, means re, back, and ligare means to bind. So whatever we do in life, we have that spirited nature within us to actually bind back to the ultimate source of our reality.
Mm. It's fascinating. Yeah, yeah, I like that.
It's amazing.
Because, John... A lot of the content that you've brought over the last 4 or 5 months is based a lot on spirituality. Like, for example, you're always moving into curiosity, wonder, yep. commitment, initiation.
Yeah.
Things like doubt, enlightenment, separation, identification and transformation, dare I say it, of manifestation.
Yeah, absolutely.
We like the nations and the
There's a lot of motivations and isms to deal with it. And thank you, John, for that summary. So I really love the idea that our actions relate to channeling of the existence we're in, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like so often we sort of look at things and we are biocentric, right? Mm-hmm. We think of ourselves as the center of the universe.
Yes.
Right? And I understand, and you know, I'd love to talk about the concept of soul in a minute, right?
Uh-huh.
But the idea of all of these actions and isms, right, yeah. I think are an attempt to reconcile the concept. So an ego, you know, our vision of ourselves, okay. the ego of who we are, our identity.
Or our existence, yeah.
Our existence is necessarily self-centered because when we're a kid, we need to be totally attending to gathering the resources of survival. Because we are completely dependent on the circumstance we're born into. Mm. We cannot survive on our own.
No.
So a baby through to a young child is absolutely focused on meeting the needs of survival.
Mm. And absorption of memory.
Just think about if you walk into a room where there's a new baby and that baby's hungry, right, how does it solve its needs? Because it can't walk, it can't talk.
It vocalises itself generally in three sort of different types of cries, doesn't it?
Yes.
A hunger one, a tension one, and a pain one.
Non-verbally, energetically, right, that enthusiasm that John was talking about, it oozes it out. And guess what? What happens to the, you know, the room could be full of adults doing important things. Mm. What happens when a baby is hungry?
Oh, well, we all stop and give them attention, don't we? You
know? So here's...
I still do that.
Absolutely. Everyone is designed to do that. So what I find
fascinating... No, I mean I'm the one that's seeking attention.
Yeah, well, when you cry, we all come a-running, right? Absolutely.
That's right. Yeah.
And I get it because it's such a beautiful solution. Where everybody in that room is unconsciously attuned to meeting the needs of the least capable in the room.
Yeah. Okay.
So the most powerful is the least powerful.
Yeah.
Because they have, you know... So what... If not, you know, like, isn't that a sense of spirituality, right?
That selfishness
is controlling the universe. For us to let go of that, to become the helper and not the helped, we need to have a concept of outside of ourselves.
Okay, I'm with you now.
I'm not the center of the universe. Yeah. I'm, in fact, a part of the universe, a part of the system that supports, you know, our well-being. So, the least capable is the one we all help.
So it's like a geocentric idea of the self or the ego.
Well, if we wanted to...
Versus the heliocentric, which is what the Egyptian were talking about.
Right.
With the sun disk, which is part of that image.
Well, they needed to anchor things on things they could see and understand. So the world and the sun, right, they're symbols, right?
Yeah, the symbols actually relate to greater, higher things, which is the correspondences.
So to get out of yourself, to remove yourself from being central, from being selfish.
Selfish, yep.
Yeah, you have to have a concept of outside of yourself.
A larger concept of divinity and the whole cosmos. So that's the whole idea of the Ra, the sun god Ra, Horus, all of those things.
So that's a religion.
Yeah, that's
and religion is framework.
To you,
a religion is a framework for helping people move from them
definitely.
To thou.
Yeah, it's to unite back to the source, which is all our origin, and that's the most important thing, because when you look at religion and yoga, you ask the question: is yoga and religion the same? And people will definitely say,
well, you could relate it, you could connect it.
Normally they'd say no.
Really?
Well, it could be
that's not, you're not definite.
Well,
then, right?
I would have thought it's connected in some way. Through spirituality, anyway.
I would say, but I'm with you.
Actual,
maybe we're not normal.
Yeah, but the principle of yoga is to unite, which is the same as religion, which is what the whole world is all about. You know, our neurons, we're all interconnected. There's a life force that connects all of us in one respect.
Yeah, we're energetic beings, right, as a consequence of our construction, right? So, you know,
you've got to flow out.
It has to flow somewhere.
Yeah,
and in fact, we exist in many places because, you know, our composite, you know, molecules exist in multiple places, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the temporal, you know, conundrum of electrons, you know, can exist in multiple places. So in reality, we're not even as solid as we think we are here. Right?
No.
So where do you? So the need for meaning in symbols and systems, like, you know, when you reach into, you know, the Egyptian knowledge or the knowledge of other, you know,
cultures.
Sort of early cultures or early religions, you know, where does that come from for you? What problem are you solving?
There's no problems that needs to be solved, because it's really pursuing the inner meaning of a lot of things. It's meaning for you, like Frankl's book, In Search of Meaning, is a very,
we talk about Victor every day, every time we come.
which is an amazing book, because he went through the Holocaust, you know, and he discovered that a person who had some meaning in their life, that their life was worthwhile, survived. Right?
So the search for purpose. absolutely.
Search for purpose, meaning, and a whole lot. So when you start looking at all these symbology, they're not just a symbol that we ignore. They're actually teaching formats for our own development, for our own enlightenment, for our own growth. They're actual functions within us that actually motivates us to grow even further, to discover things further. So when you spoke about the ego earlier on, the ego, you have the child which is full of essence, and then the ego eventually gets made and develop throughout life, and it starts to assume the person over the whole personality. So the ego becomes self-centered.
Right.
And
what's more self-centered than the baby?
Huh? No, the baby is not self-centered at all. It's complete outreach of its essence just flowing forth. It's completely innocence. The idea of innocence in a child, which is what everyone
loves. I get what you're saying.
It's just this pure innocence. Doesn't know anything about self-centeredness.
So, that's equating self-centeredness with something that isn't innocent, right? So, what is not innocent?
What's not innocent is an ego.
Charles Manson.
I think on that side, maybe just the acquisition. You know, if I know innocence. As in knowing nothing.
If I know something,
then I'm not innocent anymore.
the whole idea of that idea of knowing something or not knowing something, the idea of meaning relates to the concept of humility, right? And then the concept of humility is to actually lower yourself beyond many, many things and to apply the concept of the Wanjana tribe, which is two eyes, a nose, but no mouth.
Right.
And that's an amazing symbolic image for all of us to learn and actually implicate.
So you want to take everyone's voice away?
No, nothing to do with the voice. If I asked you what 2 plus 2 is. What's your answer?
4.
4. What's your answer? Sure. 4.
Yeah.
So we don't have to argue about that because we know the truth. Right. And the idea of no mouth is a celestial state of knowing the reality of certain things without having to argue about certain things, because you just know that 2 plus 2 equals 4.
So, but the knowing doesn't just occur.
No, it's a constant building. So when we look at the human body, we've got the bones, which is the structure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you need a vast amount of knowledge, which becomes your actual format, your framework for your spiritual body. And then you need a whole heap of... And I had an amazing experience with this idea. So you need a whole heap of knowledges to hold spiritual truth, to hold celestial truth, and to hold divine truth. You need this vast amount of knowledge so that when you look at the idea of what God is or what life is all about, we need a 360-degree viewpoint.
Mm.
Otherwise, when you have a narrow viewpoint, you can't possibly have the aspect of humility. You can't possibly understand what someone else is saying because you have this narrowness of idea, which is more egotistical based.
Right.
That my idea or concept or whatever is more powerful than yours, and that's really what the ego is all about.
So kind of. So humility is regulation of ego.
No, it's complete surrender to see your nothingness in the whole cosmic realm.
But everything's graded, right? Like you talked about ego growing from innocence to, you know, to a level of self-centeredness, right?
No, I didn't say innocence to self-centeredness. It's developed within us as we grow. As we get older, we start naming things, that's mine, that's mine, that's mine.
Yes.
So it's a developmental process. And we need an ego in the world to live in
the
world.
Well, ego is protective.
Protective, yeah.
But you can choose how you use ego. Yeah,
of course. So that's your outer mask, you might say, to look at the world and to fight the world in a sense, to be out there in the world, to show yourself. So within that concept, you have the personality, which is what the Greeks call the mask that we wear. So that's the first aspect of personality. But the second aspect of personality, which you came along and mentioned, is that the word persona is per, and sonare means to sound. So that's an amazing format as far as personality is concerned, because whatever is within you will automatically flow out, whether you say a word or not. So you can see a person who...
From expressions, so, from body language.
Just the energy of the person.
Who you are, your identity.
Your whole being, it just flows out. And so a person who's, you know, depressed, you can just feel that from his energy.
Yeah.
The heaviness, the...
Their identity, so, you know, their depression is a doing, right? It's not a being, right? Their identity is not depression.
You'd be surprised. This is the whole idea.
I'm really enjoying this discussion. I'm just sitting in the background.
I'm interested though, because like ego, like all of the things we've developed as adaptive mechanisms to survive the world.
Sure.
Right. Our response. Autonomic responses to the world, or automatic, or auto. Yeah. You know, or egoic responses, right? All of these things are just part of the process we've developed internally to adapt.
Sure.
Right? And, when we start to think about, misunderstandings or misdirections, right, we're using a tool like, say, an emotional dysregulation, like depression, that's a misunderstanding by the body or in the circumstance to an adaptive, tool.
Concept,
When you... Essentially a chemical imbalance for a lot of people.
You might say that,
So it's
like, speaking with an accent.
Right.
You know?
Shit, bro, thick, rich and crummy. What's wrong with it?
We all speak the same language, but we do it in different ways, right, with different tones and...
Yeah.
Presentations and grammar and so on. That's not the language, right? It's the way we present it.
Sure. When you mentioned something that we do things automatically, right, to cope with things unconsciously.
Yeah.
So that's the whole idea of the fourth way teaching by Gurdjieff, Ivanovich Gurdjieff. And the whole idea is that mankind's asleep.
I haven't heard of that. So where's that come from? What philosophy?
Eastern teaching, fourth way teaching is it assumes and it promotes the idea that mankind's asleep. Asleep to his higher centres, to his emotional centres, to his thinking centre.
To his range of capacity.
To the whole capacity that is, right? So they work automatically.
So and they're trying response, to wake you up.
Yeah, and they're trying to wake you up through the esoteric systems that they've developed, through the methodology, the teachings, all of these things. So the personality gets caught up in that, and personality uses the external world as its basis of growth. And it's really almost a mechanical response to things, right? And this is where a lot of psychology and psychotherapy comes into play, where this is your problem, this is how we solved it.
Fixing the mechanics.
Fixing the mechanics of it rather than the internal aspect of it.
Yeah.
I was shocked when I studied psychology in Hawaii because my teacher said to me, you know, you got two therapists. You got the psychiatrist who's trained in medicine and the human body, and you got the psychologist who's trained in the mind and the emotion. And he mentioned that the psychiatrists have got the ability to just give you the drugs, right? And today's world, as soon as you mention the word depressed, you've got a drug straight away, antidepressant. And I know a couple of women, just spoke to them the other day, they're anti-taking drugs. But they feel, and this is where the important thing is, if you feel that you need to take this for a while, it's very beneficial and do so. But it's a almost a Band-Aid effect.
Sure.
Right? When you can
If you're depending just on that alone.
Yeah. And you can actually turn things around, but there's this belief system, which is that idea of the fourth way teaching, is that, you know, you don't know what I'm suffering. You don't understand what I'm saying. You know,
I think women are better at that than us men. I think we're talking from a male's perspective here. But
So it's almost like, you know, you don't understand what I'm going through.
I'm the only person doing this.
Which is kind of true.
Which is, well,
because we all have a perspective.
Sure.
But so our look on the world, our slice of it, is determined by our journey from zero to wherever we are. So our perspective, there are objective truths, as well. I think we've spoken about that. But your perspective on the world determines your reality.
Sure. Okay. Now, there was an interesting question my teacher asked me back in Hawaii.
Oh, yeah.
And he looked at me and he says, John, what's 2 + 2?
Yeah.
And that's why I asked that question earlier, right? And I thought, damn, you know, I'm good at maths and you're asking me this silly question.
Yeah.
And you've told everyone else what's happening in their life. So my answer was 5. And he just looked at me and goes, why? I said, well, I'm the first brain. I'm the first person that thought things out, logically reasoned things out and calculated everything. So I'm the first genius in the world, right? The first mind ever. And therefore, 2 + 2 = 5 is correct based on all these principles.
Okay.
And he goes, no, you're wrong. Your principle is wrong. 2 + 2 = 4 is a principle way before you die and way before you were born. So it's looking at the principle, not so much the perspective of each person, because you suffer pain. If I cut your hand, you'll bleed. And if you cut my hand, I'll bleed. It's the same principle. All right? If you take too much cocaine, you'll die. But someone said to me once...
It's an interesting leap from cutting my arm.
I know. It's a big leap. You know, one guy said to me...
Well, who's questioning those principles?
Sorry?
So, you know, there's an understanding, like there are certain principles in the world, I get that, right? But how I operate, how I walk through the street, right, I'm going to, you know, depending on what I've worked out or what's been revealed or what I've woken up to, I'll have some understanding of the principles, but I'll also have a perspective based on my experience and my position in relation to those positions, principles. Is that...
Yeah. So we'll go into the concept of a belief system, which is what you're, in a sense, alluding to, to my understanding.
Well, perspective,
or what I'm hearing. Perspective or belief system. You've got this concept, perspective, all of this. Now, when you look at the word belief system, the etymology of a belief, it comes from Old English word, which means belophon. And that means to allow. So we hear things,
Right? Yeah.
We allow things into ourselves, And we never really questioned it. And the reason we allow things into ourselves, because right now it coincides with what we're thinking, with our perspective, with our attitude, with, you know, all the things that's happened. And we keep allowing those things in. And then before long, you start building walls around it.
Right.
And then you go to the second step of a belief system, which is the word layer, which is another old English word. And it means something precious, something that you love. So if you have a belief system or a perspective or an attitude that you that is precious to you, that you love, you will defend it with your life.
Well, there's a...
The ability to actually surrender or have that humility to accept is very difficult.
Well, see, there's an interesting thing because, like, that stuff, I agree completely, like the concept belief is a... form of value, right? Mm-hmm. So values are things we know to be important based on our experience. So we, develop an internal matrix, right? And beliefs are things we know to be true. Now they may be handed to us, or we may have acquired them by observation or osmosis. You know, so as we go through life, our beliefs are often given to us by our parents or our culture or our religion or our training or our just simply sitting there and observing and then interpreting that observation in a certain way. We know things to be true. The inability to question that, though, is actually the area that we have some educational requirement around. Checking in on your values and your beliefs doesn't mean, just because you hold them, doesn't mean they're useful.
Sure. So you mentioned two things. One, that you have a belief system that's been handed to you, you've acquired, and you said that it's something that's true.
That we know to be true.
We know it to be true.
Personally, we believe it's true because that's belief.
That's belief. Yeah. But that's the part that I'm trying to say. It's actually you haven't challenged that idea.
That's right.
Yeah. So
we learn to challenge by how?
By surrendering, by actually saying, you know, is this real? Can I look into it more?
Right.
What's the meaning behind this? Why do I have such a resentment to a certain words that someone's saying. You know, all of these things.
So you're saying that there may be a trigger, but as we build an awareness of that, then we go to saying, where is that this trigger resonating with me, right? It's giving me a sign that I might need to check in on my beliefs or values.
Sure. So you have, say, an Egyptian symbology of the eye, right? And if you draw, for example, a stick figure... mind, heart, you know, so that kind of figure.
Yeah.
Right, there's the eye.
Just for listeners at home, there's a stick figure.
Did you see that stick figure? Yeah. And the eye. So if you look at this is the whole concept of the work teaching, the methodology of the fourth way teaching and beyond the fourth way. So the eye from the Egyptian viewpoint and from many cultures, it's sort of your eye of scrutiny, your ability to have this perspicacity and your ability to have this clarity, right? So that's what the eye symbolizes. And the Sphinx actually is dedicated to Horus because that's actually facing east, and that's the eye of scrutiny, the eye of...
I wanted to come in just after
so
that.
So more scrutiny
there's a bit of it. I'm stepping up to the plate now. I am listening occasionally. All right. It's a really interesting discussion. I'm just going to duck off for a second to a quick commercial. But, this is really good. I'm really enjoying the essence of what you two blokes are talking about here. It's we're getting into quite some depth. We're here with John Bayat, who's got... Oh, the Soul, the Esoteric Science of the Soul. He's got a book out at the moment. Where can we get hold of this book, mate?
Sure, Amazon, Enhance Amazon.
Enhance,
Amazon. It should be around $30 to $34.
Okay, mate. Yep. Okay, all right. Well, we'll put that also up on the Men's Mental Health Show page. But we're also joined, as we are, a couple of times a month by the good man and life coach and all-around good fellow at times, John Millen.
Have my moments.
Yeah, we each and every one of us do. We'll be back in a moment. Just a couple of quick promos. Stay tuned. And listen, if anyone's got a question you want to throw at either of the two Johnnies here today, you can text me 0404 077 666. We'd love to add you into the discussion. Fortunately, we can't do it live, but if you've got something you wish to add, just send me a text and perhaps we can put it to the boys. Back in a minute.
You're listening to Radio Blue Mountains, streaming live on www.rbm.org.au.
And welcome back, everyone, to the discussion here on the Men's Mental Health Show. Your host, Brad Spillane here, and with John Millam, of course, life coach, and also to John Bayat, who's written a book called Oh the Soul, The Esoteric Science of the Soul. And you can get a copy of that through Amazon. Gentlemen, just before we sort of go into the next discussion, how's something that we can cultivate more humility with men? How can we go about that to generate something towards a better mental health for us through what the discussion this morning is?
Well, a fabulous question. Yeah. And and
it's coming from a listener, incidentally.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, I really love that. Because answering that question on an everyday basis transforms our lives, right? So we're always looking for a way to operate, in John's, from John's frame, right, to basically wake up. Mm. The concept of growing ourselves, right, both our inner and outer self,
sure,
I think is absolutely germane to the meaning of life for a bloke.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So how do you answer the question, like, increased example of humility in day-to-day, right, I think goes to that very question, how good am I, right, as a person, right?
I like that.
So if we then equate the purpose not to be to acquire things but to understand things and not to generate, you know, sort of significance in myself but to help others generate significance.
Yeah, sure.
Then humility is actually a process of deciding how I can help achieve my purpose.
Okay. Sure.
Right? That's if my purpose is to grow, to understand, yes, and to serve.
Yes.
Right. Humility is the act of holding my gratification in abeyance and moving that to the gratification of others being my gratification, Does that make any sense?
Oh, I think it certainly does. It's certainly something that I've worked on very hard, particularly since turning 40.
How do you do it daily? You just remember other people in the world and ask them what they need and try to be your best to do it.
Just say, you're right, I'm wrong.
Yeah.
to answer that man's question of how do we gain humility, the word humility comes from the word homus.
All right.
Right?
Hummus, chickpeas.
Which is chickpeas. Yeah. So make lots of chickpeas, all this kind of thing. It's actually a starting discussion I had when I gave a talk on it. But the idea of humility, hummus, means the ground that you stand on. So to actually prostrate yourself and lower yourself to that ground level and see your nothingness is an amazing aspect of humility. Actually feel that. Because when you sort of just look down, for example, at the night sky and look up to the sky, the stars, the heavenly stars, you'll see your nothingness in that spread of the whole eternal vastness of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And you don't even count.
So
a lot of people do things and with an attachment which they're not aware of from their leading love, that they're actually doing something to either gain promotion, to gain this, to gain recognition, to gain all of these, which they're not aware of.
Yeah.
Right? So this is really not true humility. But the idea of your nothingness in the vastness of life is actually a first step. Now, I had a great example where my teacher had this Latihan. And all of a sudden, the Latihan is a spiritual exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And I was being pushed, literally pushed by a force to the ground. Okay, and I'm like, geez. And then I opened my eyes and I could see bright blue sky.
Right.
And this is at night, okay, in this exercise. And all of a sudden, a cloud formed.
Right.
And then out of nowhere, this gigantic foot flew straight through the clouds and headed straight for my head.
Right.
And squashed it completely. Crepe head.
Right.
That's humility.
Yeah.
To show you.
We'd like to levitate, but that's been going the other way, isn't it?
To show you completely what needs to be done as far as the ego is concerned, to have that complete surrender to a higher force, to whatever. And the idea of understanding is you stand under a higher influence.
Right.
And that whole idea of self-discovery, which John Millman was saying, all these things that you do, that self-discovery of knowing who you are and what you are, and eventually translating that to self-understanding, which then becomes very useful to the whole cosmos.
Okay.
So, love the idea of examining, you know, the broader picture and then seeing yourself, right? Yeah, the Buddhist tradition is no self, right? So that it's, you know, and we often think about I am nothing, but I question nothing and no self as being the same concept, right? So I understand, yep. you know, the idea of being
non-existent,
of letting go of your need to express, you know, to be significant.
Mm-hmm.
But in that, the freedom to be significant exists, right? When we let go of the acceptance and surrender,
sure,
right? You're saying, oh, look, I need to be me and I need to carve my space out of the mm-hmm. universe,
yep.
right? When you let go of that, when you can completely connect mm-hmm. to that essence, right, to what is, you actually gain access to all.
Sure.
So there's a freedom. So when you say we don't count,
no,
actually think it, the opposite. We become more powerful, right? As powerful as the most powerful.
It's actually not what I was saying. It's the idea of humility is complete surrender to see your nothingness. It doesn't mean that you're not important. The next statement to that, I guess, is that you are a creation of the universe. The whole universal energy pours through you.
That's right. You have
so
access
very,
to it.
So you're very important in the whole cosmos.
Well, I wasn't using the term important.
Yeah.
Well, I was understanding that freedom to act, right, which is the nature of power, right? No, like it's not perception. Mm-hmm. It's actual freedom, agency,
mm-hmm.
right, exists when you let go of the need to exercise your power. You actually gain access to the universe's power.
Sure, it's part of the whole process. And I guess what you're trying to say, relate, is the idea of working on yourself to see all the different bits and pieces. That's why I try to draw that figure there, so that with the eye of scrutiny, you're able to see your mind and how it works. With the eye of scrutiny, you're able to see your feeling. And also with the eye of scrutiny, you're able to see your movements. And the whole process of integration is to see that your mind, your emotion, and your action is all at once, right? Then you will see whether you're actually having that ability of humility or not, or whether you're working personality or ego. And the concept of know thyself is originally from the Egyptian teachings and then went on to the Greeks. And the whole idea of that is when you know yourself, you have the key to life. And that's the whole process of the Ankh,
which is a given
spiritual life. So it is encouraged to try and develop spirituality now, spiritual life in this lifetime, so that you have that as a booster for the spiritual realm.
How can we apply the concept of surrender to this?
Yeah, it's good.
So, it's.
I know it's a pretty broadly.
It's yeah, it's again. It goes back to the idea of humility.
Yeah.
Right. So it's that ability to say, listen to John, to listen to you,
yes.
and just knowing that, because when you look at the whole of creation, it's a 360 degree viewpoint.
Mm-hmm.
So the quick idea of surrender is if you know that concept of mathematics,
mm-hmm.
and if you've only got a small viewpoint, then you're missing out on the other 360. Or the if you have, you know, 180, you're missing out on the other 180%.
Hmm.
So that's not surrender, right? And also what we have been taught is that if one person gives you an ounce of truth, then grab that truth and explore it much further. The rest might be rubbish, but that 1 ounce of truth will determine your life. Will give you growth and all these process. So it's almost, and also being brutally honest with yourself, when you can see negative thoughts and negative emotions coming through, you will see that if you apply this process of what I call the eye of T, because T is for thinking, E is for emotion, and A is for action. And the eye is that ability to scrutinize and have that perspicacity to see every single moment. So when a person goes like this or death or whatever, they're actually heard somebody say something, they've reacted by scratching their head, and they don't even know what they were thinking, or they've forgotten what they felt.
Right.
So they've missed that opportunity of integration.
Right.
So that's how you look at the idea of reaction. Surrender. Yeah.
Okay.
So, which I love the idea of constantly reviewing and understanding 360. So in Hawaiian tradition, Ho'oponopono, or
another one.
But when you're like, if you were in Hawaii doing some, the concept of haklau, which is like developing your
Hakaya,
haklau is a concept of understanding. It's a learning state, but it's also an awareness state, right? So developing 360 degree. What was interesting was that it was developed to support warriors, right? Because it's it's important to see people behind you as well. But it's the idea of opening up your awareness capacity to see 360. Mm-hmm. Which is interesting because surrender is something we do. So being aware of others and something like it, the concept like to surrender, you first must accept. So a little exercise. And this is like, I don't think this is, misaligned with what you were saying. Mm-hmm. Right? The idea that, so someone abuses you. Right. I know that won't have happened to you at all.
No, he's talking to me, listeners.
So try and imagine, right?
It's happening now.
Right. So try and imagine someone calling you a name.
Right.
Yeah. I don't need to explain.
E.T. They used to be called E.T. because they had a long neck.
Did that hurt?
Yeah, I was only a little kid, but then I had to keep sticking my neck out and paying for it.
So now let's do a little trip back to to little Brad, who is feeling injured by somebody calling them a name. How did you respond then?
Well, first of all, how I responded within myself was I think it's a natural thing for a child to be, tense. I was, my chest would have got tight. And I immediately expelled something back to that person my response.
Did you banter, abuse?
Abused. I would have gone back
angry.
If you call me E.T., I'll call you a goose or something,
Absolutely.
I mean?
Now, when that's you get defense. Abused now, do you still have that reaction?
No. Well, not... At times, yes, I do. Yeah. Yes, many, many times.
Maybe you're more regulated in your response.
Sure, But I still...
Let's imagine somebody had taught you to surrender. Accept and surrender at that point.
Yes.
Right? Mm. And then own... Right. So we're going to a saw here.
Like stink bug grasshopper master.
So, I'll be Brad because I don't want to trigger your past pain. But
thank you for considering me.
Somebody just called me E.T., my long neck. Oh, that makes me angry. And why? Because I actually have an internal perception that, I'm unlovable.
Yep.
Right? Or I actually look bad or something.
Yep.
Right? So then imagine if I learned to go... Yeah, there's a grain of truth in that.
Yeah. Which you do so much amongst your mates, don't you?
I have a long neck. I can see that. Mm. And then if I had learnt to surrender to that concept, my response might have been something like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
You must see me as funny looking.
So after a couple of weeks of this, I eventually did surrender to it and would do an E.T. impression. I'd stick my neck out as a six-year-old, like E.T. used to do, and then I'd go, phone home.
So that's appease.
And because, so that's appeasing, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because, essentially you're norming that, right?
Right, yeah.
You're creating, you're saying, yeah, you're right. Mm. What I'm saying is you didn't need to behave any differently.
Right.
Like if we had learnt to accept and then acknowledge the fact that that person feels like, they want to tell me I'm ugly, it's okay that person does that.
Mm.
Not it's wrong, it's an insult.
Yes.
Not frame it as something.
They're just offended. Going,
so literally own it. Yeah, I can see that you would see that.
Sure.
Maybe. And then the question becomes, what do I need to know about that?
Yeah. Mm.
Is this about them or about me? How do I respond to it?
So it's again applying the idea of the Wanjina tribe, which is the Dreamtime people, of having no mouth.
Right.
Because you don't have to respond at all.
Yeah.
Right? You just be just you, absorb know who you it. Are. Yeah. Not even absorb it, because once you absorb it, it becomes part of your
structure.
You don't
need to embody their thoughts.
And it's really that person's problem, not yours.
Mm.
If you take any bit of it on it becomes your problem.
So,
and that's the crucial aspect of the idea of Dawanjana. And also, what happened in the past, as a whale would dive down 2 miles into the sea to grab an octopus, which is its favorite food. So anything that happens in your life right now automatically relates to all this unconscious seizing mass that's happened in your past. So if you can deal with what's happening now, all that will eventually disappear or will not have the power for
loses
it.
You know,
that's the crucial thing because a lot of psychotherapy work and other work goes on to the idea of go back to the past, learn about it, do this and do all these kind of things, you know, rehash all this, and then you even got the idea of reincarnation, what happened in the past, past life regression, etc. But that moment is now, right? And the whole idea, Eckhart Tolle talks about the moment, which is the now. Now, when you look at that and you look at that on the basis of time, that moment, that so-called present moment, is still in the pathway of time. So it's passing from past to future. So that present moment is still moving forward in time. And he assumes that you have, don't worry about the future, don't worry about the past. But the idea of the eternal is to translate time into a 90-degree viewpoint. So you actually turn time into a 90-degree viewpoint and open up to a greater influx. And the idea of the word now is a Sanskrit word which means new. And it means new, something new. So if you've heard anything that's new today, then that's the moment of Kairos, the propitious moment, the right moment, and all of these things, which what the Egyptians call the art. Which is the power that comes into you, flowing into you for your own enlightenment, if you decide to grab it. Now, it goes back to the process of the idea of strange things that happen in your life, the concept of synchronicity, the concept of
providence,
providence, all of these things, right? When you look at the word weird, which is all of that, which is unusual, unexpected, it comes from an old Saxon word, weird. W-U-R-D or W-Y-R-D. And it means, and this is the amazing part, it means your fate or your destiny. So anything that comes to you becomes part of your destiny and part of your fate. If you take the next step, which is the initiative to find out the meaning behind things. Right? And this is, for example, I would hear voices. This one particular time, you know, go over there, talk to these people. I'd go in there and I just said to this woman, this person's not interested in what you're talking about, but I am. I need to know who this person you're talking about. And where did those words come from me? You understand? That was weird. And where did that thing go over there? And the words that flowed out and me saying this guy that is not interested... those are weird and unusual circumstances.
And I like this.
It's that idea of destiny, and that's how I met my teachers. And I met teachers through dreams, through symbology, through all of these things.
This is a really good discussion. It's a men's mental health show. I'm here with Mahatma Gandhi and the Dalai Lama. John Millen and John Bayat. Incidentally, I haven't given out your number, just to jump in here. I haven't given out your number. So if you need to get hold of John or you'd like to have a discussion or get some coaching or counselling, terrific bloke to talk to. Get John on 0422 672 049. Get together for face-to-face, telephone call, you know, and FaceTime, whatever
just
you like.
Hang out.
And also, too, get a copy of John Bayat's book, what we're talking about here today, or essentially, Oh, the Soul, The Esoteric Science of the Soul, which is a really good discussion. An interesting question I want to put to both of you, right? Okay, because this is probably... You know, we're reaching into the realms of, you know...
Spiritual
realms. ...of here, right? It's well above where I'm at in my life.
And for the radio audience, you're holding your hand above your head.
Yes, I am. So if some of the listeners are with me, I guess I want to sort of try and bring things back, in a sense, with mental health and whatnot. And I found a great question that I've noticed from, you know, looking at other blokes that I see, you know, through YouTube chatting. Great question. What would be the strongest piece of advice, say, you could give to a young man? Say a man coming out of high school and then into his early stages of adulthood, as going, say, into the workforce or further into his studies. What would be a really good piece of advice? I'll give you an example. For, you know, I was watching something the other day through Jordan Peterson, whether you agree with him or not, and he often refers to the greatest piece of advice you could give to a young man is learn how to say no. Mm-hmm. What would be something that either of you two blokes would put forward to, say, a young bloke that's coming up?
I would say...
Besides reading your book, John.
Yeah. I would say, look, you have a great deal of potentials. Do not give up on those potentials.
Sure.
Look at the sun. I was once told by my teacher, would you like to contribute to the depression of the world? What's your answer?
No.
No?
That sounds fun.
Okay, so everyone, almost 100%, will say no. Mm-hmm. All right, but what do they do next? Mm. How do they... I mean, it scared the hell out of me when I first said that back in the 90s, early 90s. Mm. When I said no, I thought, wow, how am I going to fulfill that for the rest of my life, where I will never get depressed again? So that was a burning question within my life at that point in time. So the idea of burning questions is very important. Mm. So I had to work out ways and understand the whole cosmic realm very quickly. Because if I did not want to contribute to the depression of the world, I had to look at the sun as a brilliant sun within me. I had to look at all the greenery around me as all this loving embracing to humanity. I had to look at that every human being has got this energy flowing through them, and that every smile is symbolic of their inner states, and their pursuit for wisdom is an amazing thing. Okay. So I had to do that. And you should also look at another advice for a young person is that whatever philosophy you take on board, you've got to have the tripod of religion. And the word religion is to bind back to the source. And you have to have philosophy, which is the pursuit of wisdom, not rhetoric of going around in circles. And then you have to have science, and the word science means to know. So that means to know the external world as well as your inner world, which is a process of part of the self fourth-way teaching, self-remembering. So once you have those three triadic format within your life, then you have a pathway to life, and it will never steer you away from a right goal, from your orthogenetic pathway.
All right. John, without a response to that, what would be your advice? Thanks, John Bate and John Millen now.
Safety is an internal space, not an external space. So you can choose to find safety always within.
Give us an example.
Okay. Conflict.
Okay.
Right?
Yep, perfect.
One person up against another.
Cool.
Right? Safety is your flexibility. You de-escalate conflict
by
agreeing with someone.
Sure.
Right? And it's that goes back to
It's harder to continue with the conflict if that's the case.
Well, if you accept what is coming up as, you know, as the best decision going forward, then, you know, like if someone threatens you, you might respond with a threat or, you know, some form of, you know, trigger.
Sure.
Right? That goes back to, you know, our trigger to threat, which is fight, flight, freeze, appease. Yep. Sure. Right? You know.
Instinctual
response. You don't have to.
Okay.
Safety is, you know, like our friend Viktor Frankl, which I've said before, is, you know, that between stimulus and response is a space. In that space is a choice. In that choice, Viktor says, there's growth and freedom. I love that because safety is in that space.
Yeah, I like that too.
Right. Yeah. You can choose to do something to de-escalate conflict outside of ego, right? If you then accept, you know, going back to our conversation with little Brad, if he accepts that somebody who is trying to achieve an insult, right, to what's the end of a bully? What is a bully looking for?
Well, yeah, exactly. You know, look.
Personal justification.
Right. Yeah, power.
Through the reaction of the individual.
Okay, yeah.
So don't you short circuit their, don't they not get what they need if you do something different?
Yeah, and it's a perfect example because that's what eventually happened with the bullying of the ET. I surrendered to it and said, you know, and I took it on, and I embraced the fact that I was ET. I considered, well, hang on, I'm with the boys now, you know, I'm with the 10 boys. They've all got nicknames, and so do I. So
exactly.
I accepted,
so
you know
it
what I mean?
A form of belonging,
and then
ostracism. Yeah,
you know,
and then it
wasn't so much as, oh, look at ET. It would be like, come on, ET, let's go for a surf, or you know, what I mean? It was acceptance.
You became safe in that tribe.
That's right. But that wasn't taught to me by my mother or father. That was the time back then where you had to sort of work things out yourself a lot of the time. You still do, to a sense, don't we?
Or you can, you know, occasionally listen to radio shows or buy a book, right? But there are still pathways to learn.
Yeah, well, you can look for shortcuts like I've often done, which doesn't work out the best of times.
Well, how many missteps, right? If we were taught that with intention, right? You know, if we were given access to gurus and people who know, or maybe even sat down at a fire and just discussed these things on a more regular basis, maybe we'd suffer less. But who knows? Maybe not.
So, yeah.
We humans find a way to learn the hard way.
There's also the idea, there's the idea of karma within all that, of responding. So the...
Of karma, like
so weird, destiny, fate.
Action.
Yeah.
Reaction, action, reaction. That's normally how karma forms, and that's what humanity does. You know, Skinner's would say, you know, human being stimulus, reaction. So within the concept of reaction, if you pause for that moment, the Wanjana image, you pause, you allow consciousness to come in. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's not a matter of, you know, being part of the group or anything of that nature. Consciousness comes in. That's that idea of the now moment that comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Something new. So that's something new. You see, you've got to look at yourself. We're in a radio station. You've got to look at yourself as a radio station where you're constantly getting all this information flowing at you.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in that quiet state and you have the receptivity of something flowing in, which is that spark of consciousness, then you have a pathway straight away. It's quite an amazing thing, but, you know, we are mechanical and we respond straight away, we react straight away. You know, we want to do this and that, and, you know, nowadays is a very amazing sort of kind of teaching where you have to speak your truth. Right, and what does that mean?
Well,
you know, speak your truth. Like you want to say things, but you don't have to. That pause. That pause makes you see and reflect through that idea that the IoT makes you reflect and see where is this coming from? Because we react from the words that people use. We don't see the thought behind it. We don't see the affection behind it. We don't see the love behind it, and we don't see the influences coming through, and this is the idea of spirituality.
Right.
We do not trace it back to where it is. We're arguing and responding from the words used or the action that's happened right in front of us.
Right.
We don't see all these things behind. Now, tell me, what are you thinking right now?
Oh, I've been thinking about a number of things.
Really, what are you thinking?
Well, it's just sort of reverting things back to karma, you know, like why do I think a lot of society misinterprets what karma is, you know, like they'll see somebody cut them off or somebody overtake them, the next thing is a policeman up the road and they get them for speeding, where really I think karma is, you know, doing good in the world. It's what you're giving out to the world, an essence of, you know, not wanting to receive anything back, but you have the belief of, if I do good, you know, if I put some plants in the ground, if I'm kind to that person, if I thank people, if I show gratitude, or, you know, that's what I believe.
So that's, firstly, my question is, did you notice that you're scratching your right eye?
No, I didn't. That's, was I?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So
I'll take your word for it.
You're looking at things. So it's part of the idea of looking at yourself, working on yourself, all this, which I found really, really helpful. Now, the idea of karma is... It comes from the word kri, which means to create, to do. Okay, so everything that you do...
So to create,
everything that you do is karmic. right? So whatever, whether it's good or bad, and the loves behind it and the affection behind doing things good and all that, if you don't see that, all of this is creating your karma. It's creating your destiny, your fate. And it's like a very fine dust cloud. It just chokes you. Right? So, you know, you have this Saudi Arabia, the dust clouds there, it just fills you, right? And you can't stop it from coming in. So that will choke you. So it's that idea of the concept of karma is to actually have that pausing aspect within yourself to allow consciousness to flow in. And that's part of the idea of surrender, humility, which is, hey, it's really hard to do.
Yeah, well, like a lot of things, it takes practice.
So let me just go back to...
It's a muscle.
Yeah. Is it?
Let me just go to try and explain this. John mentioned...
So hang on, John's holding up a picture of a triangle. What have we got in each corner? Are we going back to ego, personality and...
Ego and soul.
And soul.
It's the concept of the tornado, which was given to me in vision a long time ago. So John was talking about safety.
All right.
Earlier on. So when you look at a tornado, it spins at 400 kilometers, 400 miles an hour. So it devastates people, right? So on top of the tornado, which this swirling mass, you might say your ego and your personality lives there.
Right.
So you have idea of chaos, anger, jealousy, depression.
Reaction.
You know, reaction. Yeah. All these things that could be possibly be negative to you, right? Stress, worry, doubts, all of those things. That's swirling up there. That's the energy that's using. And people live on that basis. They utilize those energy to fuel themselves up.
Right.
But the eye of the tornado is peaceful, tranquil. It's your inner peace. It's orderly. It's harmonious. That's where your soul lives. So to utilize that whole energy to bring it down and then from the soul and have this quiescence and harmony and order within yourself, it automatically reorders everything above you or all these turmoil of the personality and ego. And then quickly you can see the formation of what you need to do, right, without being caught up in it, in the whole dialogue of personality and ego state. And that's the state of inner peace, inner quality, which a lot of people do for meditation, to have this quietness.
It reminds me of a story I heard last week. You know, a bus turns up down at Mount Kosciuszko, and there's four guides, tour guides on this bus. But in part of these four groups that are on the 32 people that are in the bus, there's six monks. And this tour guide had never seen anything like this in his life. So they get off the bus, and the first lot of guys get... you know, bikes out, they're going to go mountain bike riding, and the next lot of people have got running shoes on, and they're going to hike up and get up there quickly. And then it's a little bit elderly, it's their third group. But then the monks get off, and they take five paces, and they stop, and they look to the left, and they look up at the mountain, and they look to the right, and then they go back, and they talk to each other, and they smile. And 30 seconds later, they take six paces.
Yep.
Now, the guide was extremely frustrated because after 5.5 hours, they'd gone 300 metres. Right. He gets back and he's like, mate, you know, first, I didn't get it until just before I got on the bus. All these people are in a hurry to get up the bloody hill. When they get the hill, they get the photo, they take the opportunity, then they run back down, they get the thing, and they're all out of breath. And these monks, they've not worried about what their next step is, or what's going through their mind, how fast they've got to get there, what little time they've got, working on a time frame to get back into the bus. They're just taking it all in. Yeah. So they're like at the bottom of this triangle. So anyway, sorry, I thought I'd share that.
Can I, before we go off on and explore the motivation of monks in Kosciuszko, right? Which is important, right? I get that. I want to ask a less important question.
Oh, no.
You mentioned in the eye of the tornado exists the soul.
Yep. That's a correspondence.
Yeah, what is the soul?
What is the soul? Look at yourself in the mirror. That's the soul.
Which bit?
Well, hang on. Inches from a mirror shouldn't be repeated.
What about the bits I'm not seeing?
Sorry? That's the whole... your soul is the whole of your being.
Okay.
All right. So, this is the strangest thing. Your soul is the whole of your being. Now, from a higher source, from the divine source, energy flows through to the inmost soul, right? And then from that is you have your essence, which you develop, which becomes your individualized soul. And from that soul, your mind is integrated. So it flows down there, and from the mind, it flows to the body. So the whole aspect of everything is your soul.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, in the... There's a statement in the Bible that sort of says, you know, we are made in the likeness and image of God. Mm-hmm. Now, Tutankhamun, the word, you know, Tutankhamun was the only pharaoh and very less, an unimportant pharaoh in the whole of Egyptian history. But he has the golden mask, right? Worth billions of dollars, you might say. But the word Tutankhamun means, Tut means the likeness of, Ankh is life, and Amun is God. So it's the likeness and image of God, which is similar to the Bible statement of we are made in the likeness and image of God. So this whole process, your whole being, is that very idea of the soul, right? Mm. And the whole process of the purification of the heart, the ib, as the Egyptian would call it, is eliminating all the negativities, worries, all these things, so that you have a more influx of a higher force flowing into you, which is that idea of the soul.
What do you do once? So, like, okay, just one question on that. As your soul, you're looking in the mirror and you see yourself, and all of it is your soul, both the seen and unseen, the felt, the thought, the, you know, and even the emanations, right? Mm-hmm. Your, you know, the energies that you can take. Someone else looks at you, so you're looking at them looking at you, what are they seeing?
Up to them.
Right. But are they seeing your soul or are they seeing their own?
When you look at the ancient people when you look at the Eastern religion, they always, namaste, they bow and they bow to you.
Sure.
Right? Which is a recognition of the divinity within you, which is your soul. Yeah. That's the recognition of it. Now, if all of humanity can do that, then we would have less stress, less
war. So you say, like, be their highest expression.
Be the
close to Godhood, that we're, you know, the divine.
Or the higher power.
The higher power, which is an interesting statement, but be as purified as possible to see all these, because you need an enormous amount of knowledge. Right? So based on those triadic formats. So that idea of constantly, like hearing a lecture today or a discussion.
So thoughts,
like
emotions
today,
and actions.
Thought, emotion, action. Look at all those. Look at, you know, you need to infill yourself, as I said, with knowledges. But esoteric knowledges is brilliant. And you need that for the completion of yourself.
Which mirrors with, say, like Christianity's triune, which is... You know,
sorry?
Christianity's triune, you know, like... Father, Son, and
yeah, but
Spirit.
that's all in all religion, all the three things. Mm. But you know, if you look at what Christ said, I and the Father are one. So there's only one divinity, right? There's no three or whatever. But that idea of three is the active force, the denying force, and the reconciling force, which is part of creation.
Right.
I mean, this is all more extended.
So,
if we go back
to the pursuit of highest, you know, like, you know, presence,
right?
What does, you know, like, so you're saying if all the world had, you know, embarked on, him, you know, opening up to this, the internal divinity, or you know, what changes?
Oh, lots. There's a lot, you know. All right. You mentioned the word manifestation earlier.
Just one quick clarification. Mm-hmm. Do we keep doing what we do?
Yeah, definitely. Right?
You know, like policemen and firemen and radio
announcers. You do all of that.
Yeah.
But there's a certain emanation that flows out, right? There's Joseph Chilton Pierce, for example, had a child who had all these mystical experiences when they were young. And eventually he wanted to go back to those mystical experiences. So he started looking at drugs to get those mystical experiences. He had one session, nothing happened. Second session, great. He had all those mystical experiences. Third session, screwed up his mind. Okay, so he was distorted, you know, in black hole, so to speak. So Joseph brought him to his guru, which is Muktananda Paramahansa, right? And when, you know, the guru smiled at him, put some, you know, feathers on him, and then all of a sudden his son said, "He is there, he is there, he is there." And like, what's that mean, you know? So it was nothing that the guru did. It was his development of his inner state. Because your inner state, your state of being in relation to what you're doing right now, your state of being determines your place in the universe, right? So so he was healed because of the emanation from the guru, which is pouring out all these inner states into the sun. And he recognized that. He recognizes that's that inner peace or that tranquility or that soul aspect of the tornado. So that's the most important thing, because the question that was asked with the, you know, with the concept of depression is this, and this is a really important question. There's Paramahansa Yogananda, who wrote the book Autobiography of a Yoga. His teacher, Yukteswar, would say three questions. Who are you? What are you? Where are you? So, Brad, where are you?
I'm in response to. I haven't drifted off, and I wish I had the skills of being able to do three things at once. Yeah, but I'm responding to some listeners and replying. Right. So thanks for putting me on the spot.
They can call me if they want. Yeah, they can call me. So for me, the most important question was, where am I? Mm. Because the next question was, what happens if you die now? Right, we never know when we're going to die.
We don't know. I mean, it can only go on the belief of.
Anytime. Could happen anytime.
Okay, yeah.
So that question really is asking, what state are you in?
Yeah.
Right? What state are you in? Because that determines your place in the whole spiritual cosmos.
Or in your karma, or what you've done, or
it's an amazing concept.
Yeah. Can I add another element to that?
Sure.
Because, who are you? Where are you? And what do you? You know, what are you doing, right? Where basically they're, you know, absolutely, you know, being present. So they're positional questions that relate to who you are in this moment right now. You know, who are you being, not just what you're doing, right? And they're the beginning processes of a coaching session, right? So because the next question is, who do you want to be? Where do you want to be? And what do you, and how, you know, how do you want to get there, right? So, you know, assuming if you die now, right, you're at least aware of who you were, right? So spiritually, I guess that's important, you know, in terms of whatever's next. But then corporeally, right, you know, in the real world, we're on a journey as well. So it's not just about spiritual, we have a parallel journey to express in the current realm, in the current dimension that we're having, to express our best self as well.
Yep. And this is the illusion of spirituality versus what we can do now, right? Because spirituality is about life, being spirited in life, having that enthusiasm for living and being part of this great cosmos and being part of this great wheel that you are one of the most important cog in the wheel. So the idea is you have to still develop your spiritual content, but you've also got a career, which is part of all your possibilities, which you have to develop. Yeah. So the idea of what am I? You are a transforming process of energy. You eat, your body transform all that so that you have life. Who am I? You are an aspect of divinity coming to flesh, right? So those are completely cosmological teaching, which does not exclude what you have to do in this life, because to do what you do in this life is to actually be part of all that cosmology. And that's the most humbling experience, the most surrendering experience that you could possibly have. Now tell me, what were you thinking just now?
I was aware
of my nose because I've actually got an itchy nose,
That's a great excuse.
Irritated skin. However, what I was thinking, what came to me was a concept of saying, oh, okay, I get it. I've been, you know, like, you know, seeking that inner peace, mm-hmm. right? Absolutely necessary. So you mentioned Eckhart Tolle, and of course, mm-hmm. he sat on a garden, on a mm-hmm. park bench sure. for 2 years,
sure.
right? And I get this sense that in the eye mm-hmm. of the tornado, mm-hmm. that sense of inner peace also has a sense of static, you know, sort of inactivity, right? So if I, and you know, when you're thinking about a human mm-hmm. being in that eye of the tornado, and mm-hmm. I've actually been mm-hmm. in a big storm and mm-hmm. found the eye, mm-hmm. and this sense of release and sure, calm and sure. peace, mm-hmm. palpable, right? Yep, sure. But there's also this sense of anxiousness that sure. the storm around
sure.
I should avoid, right? Yep, so sure. I should stay in mm-hmm. this space. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, you know, and I see this in a lot. You know, people seek gurus, they mm-hmm. find yeah, gurus, yeah. and they then become obsessed with being in that moment of mm-hmm. teaching or understanding. Mm-hmm. Or for them, it's mm-hmm. an epiphany, mm-hmm. and they stay there.
Sure.
But any epiphany is only useful if the wisdom we learn
sure.
is applied to our sure. lives and the lives of others, surely. Yep.
Sure.
So don't we need to move?
Sure. Most people want to have a guru. My teacher once said to me, people want to kiss my feet, which nice. Is part of the Indian teachings and yeah. Eastern teaching. And he had to ask them to leave because that's not him. Yeah, it's yeah. not, that's not what a guru is. A guru is to teach. A teacher is to show you the way. Mm. And that's all it is. Ultimately, the divine is the ultimate teacher. But you need to have someone to guide you along the way. Right, and to show you certain things.
Isn't
and
that part, center, that calm inner peace, isn't that a trap?
Not at all. Because if you look at people meditate on a candle. Right. A candle is very still, supposedly the flame. Right. But inside that flame, it's vigorous.
Yeah, it's life.
It's multiple. It's everything. Life. It's everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in that calm, you have this amazing amount of photons, neuron, you know, all the neutrinos flowing all the time. What science used to call a nothing space is actually filled with life.
Mm.
And that's the part which is energizing you at the same time.
Boys, it's been a wonderful discussion. I'm sorry to sort of, this could go for
a
long time.
Dad, can I stay up a bit longer?
No, right. Not tonight. You haven't done your room.
Right.
And anyway, we'll talk about that afterwards as far as that goes.
So I just want to check in. Have we answered all the questions?
Yeah. We pretty much have. There's been a couple that have just come in the last 2 minutes. There's somebody that sent me something from, which was quite entertaining. Someone sent me something from... where is it here? From Leo Tolstoy. But, you know, maybe we can do that and look into that on the next...
Leo never goes away.
Yeah, we can look at that perhaps in the next episode we do. It's a Men's Mental Health Show. We've been blessed today to have author John Bate, who's come up from the Northern Beaches, along with John. They don't know each other, but they're from neighbouring suburbs, Newport and Manaba. His book's Oh, the Soul, The Historic Science of the Soul. You can get hold of that through Amazon. And John Millam's...
20% goes towards mental health.
Oh, 20% goes towards mental health. Good on you, mate. That's awesome. Yeah, cheers. And you can get hold of John Millam, of course, life coach and counsellor and just all-around good bloke if you want to chew the fat. I know he loves to have a chat. I called him up last night at 10 to 10, and I think I got off the phone about 1:30. It was you get hold of John on 0422 672 049. Perhaps send him a text so he can pay for the phone bill and call you back. Mm. That's my advice. But otherwise, thanks for listening, tuning in today. Big thanks to all manufacturing personnel, recruitment and labour hire in the manufacturing industry for all your staffing solutions. Get hold of Greg Beachy. And a big thanks to B2Body, B2Body.com. Some good stuff, that Manukani.
And you mentioned it's part of your heritage, mate.
So, yeah, no way. It's on my mother's side. Yeah, originally Watson and Son, they were the original founders back in 77, 78 of Manuka, and since passed on. And, my uncle Dennis Watson, he moves all around the world now. He's distributing his pollen and honey to other countries. Pakistan, I think, is using it now. We're using it here in Australia. We're able to produce it. Even countries like Czechoslovakia. This is wonderful.
Love it.
There's good karma, isn't it?
And no wonder you're so sweet.
Not keeping a secret, man. He's sharing it to the world. He's won a couple of Nobel Prizes. Who knows? One of you blokes could get one of them too.
Mate,
I hope you get one.
Yeah. Not me.
I don't.
Me.
I don't want anyone to my feet.
Now they don't give Dunbar prizes to people like me. They give government grants to people that know me.
That's right.
But thanks for tuning in, guys. It's a Men's Mental Health Show. Stay tuned. We'll be back next week. And
thanks,
remember, listeners. Let's not be quick to judge.
You.
Let's be kind to each other. Yeah. Send some love.
That's important.
Might not like love, but it's hard to hate. All the best.
Love your work.